This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
What will global warming mean? Will you buy air conditioning or need to move? Climate change sounds like a great drama for humanity, as though we live alone on a mechanical planet. In reality, we are small guests among billions of other living things, the animals, insects, plants, and more. They too will react. And we begin with the plant world, where new science reveals underappreciated plant vulnerabilities to heat waves. The lead author of that paper is David D. Brashears. David is Regents Professor at the School of Natural Resources and the Environment at the University of Arizona in Tucson. In 25 years of publications, Brashears became the expert's expert on forests, grasslands, drought, and crops in a warming climate. From Arizona, David Brashears, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Is it true to say that human contributions to greenhouse gases are kind of small compared to the vast amounts of water and gases that plants cycle through the atmosphere?
Yeah, the plants cycle a lot of water. That's one of the main ways that water gets back into the atmosphere. We have evaporation from soil, and we have transpiration through plants.
When added to natural systems, though, it just seems to me that our greenhouse gases are the tipping point, that we are the tipping point into what was previously a relatively balanced system. And when the public thinks about tipping points, we tend to expect everything to change all at once. But a recent guest pointed out, no, it's for her more the point where things reach an inevitable decline or change. How do you define tipping points in your work, David?
Well, I particularly look at tree mortality. And so a tipping point there is when we begin to see trees die. And in particular, you know, if you go out to any particular forest, you can find maybe a few percent of the trees that die regularly just through old age and natural processes. What we're looking for in the tipping point is when we see a large number of trees die at a given time in response in particular to a given event, which now we see is usually drought and warmer temperatures, and that's what I've been focused on for much of the past 25 years.
Yes, looking through your earlier publications, I see some fairly detailed work and regional studies, but then you look at the global picture and you team up with other scientists to ask big fundamental questions like how will large living systems respond to climate change? For example, there's your 2010 co-authored paper, Climate-Induced Tree Mortality, Earth System Consequences. Please talk to us about how forest die-off feeds back into climate change.
Well, we're starting to ask questions about if you have a big enough change in the land surface, that changes the climate near the ground or the microclimate, and that can have exchanges with the atmosphere. And if that's big enough, it could influence circulation elsewhere. But the most important impact of having large-scale tree die-off is probably loss in carbon storage. So trees are a key part of our Earth's carbon storage system. And what we're really dealing with is a balance in the carbon or imbalance in which we're burning fossil fuels and putting a lot of carbon in the atmosphere. And if we continue to lose trees, we continue to lose carbon. And in fact, a lot of the plans that countries have for trying to address carbon emissions currently focus on adding more trees. And yet what our research has been showing us is that we're at risk of losing a lot of trees. So there's a little bit of a catch-22 in that we would like to have trees to help us slow our warming, and yet it's currently warming, and that warming is killing trees. So it's a bit of a catch-up game, and it's going to be difficult to get enough trees to store carbon. And so that really reverts us back to needing to directly reduce our carbon emissions rather than simply relying on forests to solve the whole problem for us.
I get it. And how serious is climate-induced tree mortality?
Well, we think that we're just beginning to see the tip of the iceberg. We have had a progression in our learning, and if I could, I'll go back in time and just give you a little walkthrough of a progression of understanding that's happened over the last 25 years.
Yes, please do that.
So my work began with a good colleague and friend, Craig Allen, who was at the time with the Bandelier National Monument. And we used historical aerial photographs to go back in time and look at the causes of a drought or the consequences of a drought in the 1950s. And at the time, this was in the early 90s when we were doing this research, and ecologists were starting to wonder more and more about what was going to happen with climate change. And in particular, they were expecting that we should see changes in ecosystems at the border, the ecotone, the boundaries between ecosystems, that that's the place where we might expect stress to show up first. And yet most of the studies that we had of how big and how fast ecosystems could change, they were studies that showed us very nicely that ecosystems could change over very large scales over long periods of time. So we had changes in vegetation that we could detect with pollen records that would show us changes over large scales, like a quarter of the northeast of the U.S. So we knew that vegetation changed over large scales. What we didn't know is how quick and fast some of these vegetation changes could occur. When we looked at these historical aerial photographs during this severe drought of the 1950s, we looked at the boundary or the ecotone between an upper elevation, cooler, moister ponderosa pine forest and a lower, drier pinyon juniper woodland. And what we saw was that there was lots of vegetation die-off, lots of tree die-off of ponderosa pine at its lower end of its distribution. And so effectively, we saw the ecotone shift more than 2 kilometers in less than 5 years. So that's a pretty big shift in a very short amount of time. And we also saw that that shift was pretty persistent. We had records up through the 1980s in terms of aerial photographs. So up through 30 years later after the shift, and the vegetation recovery had still not occurred. And in the mid-90s, going out into the field to observe these locations, we could see that the vegetation recovery had still not changed. So we have a big, fast change associated with drought at the ecotone occurring, and that's where we were expecting the biggest changes to happen. And so that was sort of the first part of our conversation about thinking about how much drought-induced tree mortality might happen as we start to see climate change. So we were concerned about drought. We thought it would be a long time till we got to the next chapter of the story, but in 2001 and 2002, another drought hit the same landscape. And I was studying a ponderosa pine woodland in the area, and this ponderosa pine woodland was at its upper elevation. So for that species, it was at the wetter location of its distribution. So it's the location that you would expect if you go into a drought would be a bit safer. Well, during this drought in 2001 and 2002, we had more than 90% of our pinyon pine trees died. So it was a really extreme die-off. And importantly, it didn't happen at the lower ecotone. It happened all up and down the distribution of this species. And so that even at the best sites for this species, we had lost 90% of the vegetation, or 90% of the pinyon pine, I should say, which was about half of the tree species. There was a tougher species there, juniper, which most of the juniper survived that drought. So we had a very big change in the landscape due to that tree mortality. And we looked and thought, well, this must be a worse drought than the 1950s. And we were really focused on the drought component. And what we saw was that this drought was not any worse than the 1950s in terms of precipitation, but there was a increase in temperature. And during the maximum, sort of averaged over the summer months, there was about a 0.2C warmer temperature, but there were also some extremes there. So we started coordinating with other researchers across the Southwest, and we saw that this event didn't just happen in one location, but it happened across much of the southwestern U.S. And what we determined was that this drought had worse impacts, not because it was a worse precipitation drought, but because it was a hotter drought. At the time, we called it a global climate change type drought. Now we're using a term hotter drought. So it was a hotter drought than it occurred in the 1950s. And we realized that this was going to be one of the key risks, one of the key threats of climate change, is that even if drought doesn't change, we know with a lot of confidence temperatures warming. We know that warming temperatures are one of the most persistent and pervasive effects of climate change. And so even if droughts stay the same and don't get worse, the next drought is going to be a hotter drought. It's going to be associated with warmer temperatures. So we speculated in this paper that it was hotter drought that killed the trees and made things worse, and that this might be a harbinger of what we were going to see in the future. The next step in the story takes place at Biosphere 2. I had moved to University of Arizona, and we had the opportunity to take over Biosphere 2, which is the large glasshouse facility you may have heard about that was originally used to see if people could live off the planet in a self-contained environment. But it's an important experimental facility because it's the world's largest greenhouse, essentially. And what we did in that greenhouse in Biosphere 2 is we took trees and we wanted to test our idea or our hypothesis that hotter drought would kill trees faster. Now, that sounds to non-scientists like a really stupid question, like the answer should be obvious. But it's one of the most fundamental questions of climate change, and it's something we hadn't tested. And in addition to knowing, does hotter drought kill trees faster, we also wanted to know how much faster and how sensitive would a species be, and to get some other associated physiological measurements off the plant. And so we took pinyon pines, which are relatively small trees, and we dug up some sapling size, close to small adult size trees, and we brought them into Biosphere 2, and we put them in two different locations. One location had climate close to the average temperature for that species, and another location had hotter temperature. And not surprisingly, we saw that hotter temperature kills trees faster. And so this was sort of a confirmation of what we were seeing in the field. And so those two things together suggested that hotter drought was going to become a problem. And that leads us to the paper that you were talking about, where we started to take a look globally to see if we could see evidence for trees dying around the planet.
Are we sure, though, that planet Earth is losing more trees in the hotter zones that you describe than it produces in wetter regions like the boreal forest?
Yeah, we're not sure yet. There are places where we're having increases in tree cover, and there's woody plant encroachment, which is a term referring to trees invading grasslands or other areas where trees aren't occurring. There's changes in the fire regime that sometimes allow trees to expand. So currently, it's hard to say if there is a net increase or decrease in tree cover overall. And in fact, a lot of the models that we have of the environment say that we should be getting an increase in tree cover through time. However, those models don't really have good ways to predict tree mortality. We don't understand the underlying mechanism that causes tree mortality. Just like it's hard to predict longevity in people, or it's hard to predict when an individual is going to die, it's hard to predict when a tree is going to die. And there's a lot of complex factors that go into understanding the environment, and there's a lot of complex physiology happening inside the tree that we don't really fully understand enough yet to be able to make good predictions about when trees are going to die. What we've learned so far is that for the species that have been looked at, whenever you have hotter temperatures with drought, you get an increase in tree mortality. And what our global look revealed was that we looked back over the 30 years into previous research studies, and we found lots of examples of trees that had died with drought and warming, and it wasn't enough by itself to suggest that we have a trend in increased tree mortality. But combined with the other work, which was observational and experimental, it suggests overall that we are going to have a lot of tree mortality in the future.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith from the University of Arizona. We are speaking with Professor David Brashears about the impact of the new heat on plants as the world warms. Well, again, David, this new work changes our perceptions. The Intergovernmental Panel's work is focused on, and so much popular press emphasizes, that long, steady curve upward of temperature as carbon ramps up. But what if extreme events are more important than global averages?
Yeah, that brings us to heat wave. The story that I just told you was about drought and average warming, or what we might call chronic warming. Some colleagues of mine in Australia came up with some additional observations that really added a new chapter to the story to help us think about heat waves, which we could think about as acute warming, very short events punching in and hitting the biota. One of the things that's interesting is we know that heat waves are very, very bad in terms of human population. We see lots of increased human mortality in cities when we have extreme heat waves. And probably other biota we might expect are going to be sensitive to heat waves too, but we don't have the research there to evaluate that yet. What my colleagues in Australia did was they saw that in one of these examples from around the world where we had tree mortality occurring with drought and average warming, what they saw was there was also a large heat wave spike that occurred. And right after that heat wave, lots of the trees died. And so it was a short heat wave on top of a hotter drought. And that short heat wave really kicked in and caused a lot of tree mortality. At first, they reported it for a couple of species. And then we started working together and tried to collect a lot of information. And it turned out this heat wave was an enormous heat wave in 2011. Went up and down the coast of Western Australia, so that's about the size of California, and there were more than 10 species of trees and shrubs that were impacted there. And I want to read you just a short quote from the summary of that paper, because what we did is we looked at the effect of this heat wave on the land, and this heat wave was big enough that it was also lingering over the marine system too. So we had a heat wave, like a great big blob, sitting across both the land surface and the ocean surface, and it impacted all types of things. Tree die-off and coral bleaching occurred concurrently in response to the heat wave and were accompanied by terrestrial plant mortality, seagrass and kelp loss, population crash of an endangered terrestrial bird species, plummeting breeding success in marine penguins, and outbreaks of terrestrial boring insects. These multiple taxa and trophic level impacts spanned more than 300,000 square kilometers, comparable to the size of California, encompassing one terrestrial global biodiversity hotspot and two marine World Heritage areas. So we had enormous impacts from this heat wave in 2011, both in terms of the extent and in terms of impacting lots of different biota. So that has really raised our concern that heat waves or these short acute warming events may be a trigger for what might happen in the future in terms of impacting biota and ecosystems.
Yes, Australia. in Australia in 2019, they had fires starting in December that burned, I'm told, up to a third of their deciduous forests down to the ground. That's a magnificent change on a big continent. What would be the effects of such large-scale losses during heat waves and droughts and those fires?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we talk about, and I'm not sure to the extent that the 2019 event was involved with heat waves per se, but it was a chronic hotter temperature that probably had some heat waves interspersed within it. But that dries out the vegetation. That results in a huge loss of biomass. It can impact soil biota. It can impact the soil stability. So after fires, we're generally worried about flooding and loss of soils and the impacts that floods can cause on dwellings and things nearby. So the impact of heat waves is really potentially quite large, and it's similar to the types of concerns that I raised when I said that if we lose a lot of trees, we lose a lot of carbon. Trees also provide structure. You think about, you know, when you think about what you call an ecosystem, say whether you call it a grassland, a shrubland, or a forest, deciding whether it's a forest or a savanna, say, is determined by, is there tree cover and how much tree cover is there? If you lose a lot of trees, you may change the microenvironment, and that impacts a lot of different organisms below it as well. One of the reasons that we're so concerned about heat waves is that if you have a bit of warming, you get a whole lot more high temperature events. So in particular, we looked at an example in Perth, and we compared historical temperatures, 1911 to 1936, with more current temperatures, 1989 to 2018. And you could see that the temperature distribution had shifted up warmer a bit, and it had gone up about a degree or two. But then if you look at the extreme events that occur there, we first looked at, well, how many more days do we get now that are hotter than 40 degrees C, so about 100 Fahrenheit? And that number of days, about 40 degrees C, doubled in that period. So you can see that with a small shift in the average temperature, you get a big increase in the frequency of extreme events. And then we used a more formal definition of a heat wave, which is three consecutive days or more of temperature that's above the 90th percentile. And there we saw a 50% increase in the number of heat wave events. So a doubling of the days over 40 degrees C and a more than 50% increase in the number of heat wave events. That's an illustration from Perth, but that's a basic property of having temperatures shift warmer. So everywhere where we have warming occurring, which is most of the planet on average, everywhere where we have warming occurring, you're getting that type of pattern where you get many more extreme events. So when I say I think that we're seeing the tip of the iceberg in terms of tree mortality, as warming progresses, we're going to probably see a lot more of these mortality events because we're going to have a big increase in the frequency of extreme events.
You know, the contradiction I have trouble wrapping my head around is I talk with other scientists who say we're heading into a wetter world. We're going to have more urban flooding. We're going to have extreme rainfall events. And you're from Arizona, and your cohorts are from Australia, talking about drought and a drying world. So how can both of these happen at the same time?
Yeah, well, one of the things that is happening with climate change, we call it the intensification of the water cycle. We're having more extremes of different types. So just like if we have an extremely big, unusual winter storm, that doesn't mean that climate change isn't happening. In fact, the effects of climate change are that we're going to have more extreme events of a variety of types. So both types will occur, but what you can think about is everywhere sort of has droughts, and sooner or later, a location is going to have a drought, relatively speaking. on average. And that drought is going to be hotter than prior droughts. And because of this argument that I just presented about the distribution, you're going to have an increase in the frequency of heat waves. So all of those things are going to come into play. That's not to say that there might not be interspersed with extreme flooding or extreme wet events, but there definitely is going to be an increase in hotter, drier events that are extreme that are likely to take trees out.
Well, we don't have the luxury of just waiting throughout this century to see how it happens and record it all down, because we have some severe threats we might have to deal with. So you suggest there might be ways we could test this out, and you've touched on that with the biosphere experiment. How can we test out what the limits of plants are so we know what we're up against?
We need to do some quick trials on some of the key plant species that we care about. Those might be species that are widespread, or they might be species that are good representative plants for our models that we use to model the whole Earth system. And we have four different types of questions that we might ask. The first is just confirming or testing a heat wave. Does it matter? So putting plants in a chamber and asking if you have a heat wave or not, does that kill the plants? How much faster does it kill the plants? Which species are more sensitive than others? Second variation of that experiment would be to vary the duration of the heat wave. So what happens if you have a 3-day heat wave, a 5-day heat wave, a 10-day heat wave? How much difference does that make? And what are the implications of that for those different species? Then we can also vary the magnitude of the heat wave. What if the heat wave is 5°C over normal? What if it's 8°C over normal? What if it's 10°C over normal? How much does that matter? And then finally, we can combine those with asking how much does the base temperature matter? So if we have that chronic average warming and that goes up by 2°C, 1.5°C, 4°C, how much does that matter? Are heat waves equally devastating under different base temperatures of warming? That's a series of trials that we've proposed in this new paper. I do want to make sure that I save time to end on a positive note about what can be done about all this.
Well, this is the time. We are going to have to wrap it up.
Okay, well, let me recap three key points that I'd like to leave the listeners with. The first thing is that we've gone through a progression of thinking about drought to hotter drought with chronic warming to hotter drought with these heat waves that look like together they're posing a big threat to our systems. And second, as it gets warmer and warmer, the distribution shows us that we're going to get a lot more of these heat waves. And given the uncertainty of heat wave effects, we need these trials that I just talked about. The last thing that I want to leave listeners with is that every bit of reduction in warming could help. We have one study in which we've seen with chronic warming that trees keep dying faster and faster as the temperature gets hotter and hotter. And we know that if we shift the distribution upward, we get a big increase in the frequency of extreme events like heat waves. But if we shift the distribution back down, then we can get a reduction. So it's very important that we not slide the distribution up any more than necessary, any more than we can avoid. So the positive news is that every bit of reduction in warming could have a large positive effect on helping us reduce the amount of tree mortality that we're going to experience in the future. And that's going to be important to trying to save as much forest as we can to hold carbon in, as opposed to losing forest and lose that carbon and amplify the warming.
From the University of Arizona, we've been speaking with Professor David D. Brashears, and you can find links to his free access paper that we've been talking about, Underappreciated Plant Vulnerabilities to Heat Waves, in my weekly show blog. I'll put a link there at ecoshock.org. David, thank you for taking the time to help us out. I appreciate talking with you.
Thank you so much.
I'm Alex Smith.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.